I just keep thinking to myself, like, God, this is the best fucking journey there is. Like, this is, I would so much rather sit with myself, write things out, go inside and understand these things than go somewhere else in the world and sit on a beach and enjoy it. Like, it's like the journey inside is just so incredible. So I've been feeling a ton of gratitude around that. And it wouldn't be possible without the pain, wouldn't have been possible without quitting drinking and just the corresponding putting stuff out there and knowing how much of a need for that conversation there is and seeing, you know, the responses to it and knowing that I'm making a difference somehow in some small way. It's just really special to me.
Podcast, what is really good? Thank you so much for being here. Today on the podcast, I had a conversation with Jay Woodford. Jay Woodford has worked with Team Gary V on creating the Curse-Free Gary V podcast and YouTube channel. I came across his work when I was just scrolling through TikTok, and I remember watching one of his videos and then subsequently watching probably 12 or 15 more of his videos where he was talking about, you know, early childhood trauma, the death of his father, how he quit drinking, why he quit drinking, what he had learned from people like Gary Vee and Gabor Mate and Brené Brown and Jordan Peterson. And he was just talking a lot about self-awareness and empathy and addiction and a lot of the inner work that I'm just super duper interested in at this time in my life for whatever reason. And I decided that, hey, he's talking about a lot of the things that I want to talk about. We have very different stories, but I think by unpacking his story, I can provide a lot of value to the people who are listening to my podcast. And so that's exactly what I did. That's why I wanted to bring him on. And we're about to have a very wide-ranging conversation that's going to start with why he decided to quit drinking. We're going to talk about the death of his father, some of the early childhood trauma that he had to go on an inner journey to reconcile and accept and become okay with, and how he feels now that he's basically on the other side of it. I think there's a lot of nuggets that a lot of people who have struggled with mental health and emotional trauma can latch onto. And I'm really glad that I was able to be the facilitator of that. So let's jump right in. I don't want to take up any more of your time. This is my conversation with Jay Woodford, and I so appreciate that you are here to listen to it. And Caster. All right, here we go. So Jay, you know, I got into you because I found some of your content on TikTok, and it seems like the basis or the foundation of the content has been when you decided to quit drinking 8 or 9 months ago. So tell me why you decided to quit drinking.
That's a big question. I think the biggest thing was I saw the damage it was doing. Honestly, my wife kind of gave me an ultimatum. It was like, you have to quit. I see what this is doing to you. Obviously, anybody who's gone through it will be able to attest it. It just makes it much harder to be functional as a parent, as a husband, as anything, especially when the root of it is unresolved trauma. And my wife would say to me frequently, and she's honestly, like, for anybody who's a spouse that's going through this, you know, a spouse that's witnessing somebody going through this, my wife was instrumental, although I would definitely throw in the caveat that she wasn't responsible for it. I don't want to give the impression that somebody else is responsible for somebody else getting over this, but she never shit on me. She never added self-condemnation to what was happening, which I think was so important. She would say to me often, Jay, you're sacrificing what you could be. And when you quit drinking, so much more is going to happen. You're better than this. That was the one thing that she said to me. Like, my last drink was on Christmas and woke up the next day just, you know, a mess. And she said, this has to stop. And she said, I just remember her saying, you're better than this. And it was like, yes, I can be better than this, you know? And so it was, I think a big part of it was realizing I had a lot more to live for. I grew up with my mom as an alcoholic, which a lot of people are like, well, what the hell? How could you go down that road then? And it's like, well, that's the thing about this is when you start understanding trauma and you understand that it's not rooted in somebody just making a stupid, irrational decision, you know, it makes sense of all those things. So I didn't want to end up like that. I didn't want to put my kids through what my mom put me through. I love her. She quit 6 years ago. It's been an amazing story. And yeah, so it's just a combination of a lot of things. At that time, I'd started Gary Vee's Curse-Free Gary Vee podcast in October or November. So I was listening to a lot of Gary's content, whereas before, you know, I never made time to sit down and listen to stuff that much or read. When I was in the car, I'd put it on. That was basically what I started it for, was because I was driving my kids to hockey and jujitsu. And, you know, I didn't want my, can you swear on this? Is it okay to swear on here?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I always say that I didn't want my kids calling somebody a fuckface at hockey practice. So I actually just edited some of Gary's podcasts, took out the F-bombs and then posted them on Anchor. And then it took off. So long story short, I approached their team. And I've been officially working with them since December, but I wanted to make sure that my guys were editing it perfectly. So I reviewed every episode leading up to it. And, you know, having that information constantly, that scale in your mind, it, you know, it doesn't fit well with doing something self-destructive like drinking. So there's a lot of elements to it.
So I want to loop back around to Curse-Free Gary V, because you're the first person I've talked to who's on Team Gary V, which is really interesting. So there's an interesting relationship between what you put out on TikTok and what Gary Vee likes to talk about. You know, when you talked about your relationship with drinking, you talked about unresolved trauma. Yeah. And one thing that Gary is a really big fan of is not dwelling on the past. Talk to me about your perspective on how much attention we should be paying to the things that happened in our past.
That's a really good question. And that's something that I've been struggling with in terms of how to reconcile the messages and trying to understand Gary's perspective from his standpoint. I think the thing is that people tend to dwell on things. I think out of self-condemnation in a way, sort of. So I can't answer this because I'm not an expert, but for me, because of the fact I never dealt with my past. I never parked on stuff. I found my dad dead at 16. That was not something I parked on and became a victim of. That was an incredibly triumphant moment for me.
What does triumphant mean?
I faced it head on. I found my dad dead. He was my best friend. I sat beside him and I remember it must've been about, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes after I'd found him, and I'm sitting beside him. And I remember looking, he was right near an outside door, and I'm looking out over the mountains right close to us. It was a spring evening, April 29th, 2000. I remember sitting there. And I remember it was like I grabbed myself by the collar and shook myself and said, you have to fucking face this right now. Your dad is dead. You're never going to see him again. You're never going to talk to him again. You better figure this out right now. Because I knew how I just be, somehow this isn't me. I don't know what the hell how this happened, but somehow I just knew in the depths of who I was that if I didn't accept this right now, it was going to lead to major self-destruction. And so how I dealt with that was really predicated on that realization at that time. But circling back to the question about dwelling on things. So, you know, I've been through that stuff. I don't dwell on it. And a big thing with this past, I was listening to Jordan Peterson, and he did a talk on courage. If you love Jordan Peterson or you ever are wondering about this stuff, his talk on courage, it's on his podcast. 11 minutes in or so, when he starts talking about if you have unresolved trauma that you haven't dealt with, or you have unresolved memories that still bother you, you have to go in and deal with it. And that was the first thing that started to make me realize maybe I got some shit going on here, because no amount of positivity is fixing this. I have this angst and this frustration. And this year, because I wasn't drinking when my dad's anniversary came, April 29th of his death, I was really starting to get in this place where I was getting very introspective and starting to kind of process things. And I realized for the first time that I had this constant underlying sense of sorrow when it came to life. I looked at my kids with intense gratitude and love like every parent does, but I always looked at that through the lens of, but they could be gone in an instant because I felt that pain, and it's so incredibly dark and deep. So it just became obvious. Like at that, I remember that moment I was saying to my wife, there's obviously some shit that needs to be dealt with. I always thought I dealt with this so well, but there's obviously something there. So, I think that people who are talking about not dwelling on things need to be really careful. The conversation that has been a point of frustration for me in a lot of circles, because a lot of it equates to just get over it. And that when you're dealing with major trauma and major issues is not a strategy that works. When it's minor things like somebody ripped you off for $4,000, yeah, you know, you can't do anything about that. Get over it. But when it comes to the deep shit that's happening, people got to face it. Like, you just, that's what it is. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. So from your perspective, how do you know when it's something minor that you should get over, or whether or not it's something that needs to be dealt with? Like, for you, how do you know?
I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I think for me, I mean, I can get frustrated about little things. And it's one of the things I've noticed. It's like, how the hell could you be the way that you were through the death of your dad? And when shit hits the fan majorly, like, I am completely calm. It's ridiculous. But if my phone's pissing me off, I want to throw it through my office window. Like, it's so, when that happens now, typically I'm like, I'll take a step back and be like, hey, what's really going on? Because that's not the issue. There's 50,000 other things that built up and you haven't processed it. And that's pretty new for me. So, and I don't know what it's like for other people. You know, sometimes I think people can get into that mode of being frustrated by things and they dwell on that stuff. So I think there is an element to it. I just don't know it. I don't know that personally. I can't speak to it. But for me, it's a lot of times I'll look at it, and when I see people complaining, like, yeah, there's something more going on underneath the surface. It isn't just this. That was just like the straw that broke the camel's back. Is basically kind of how I look at it.
Tell me, I want to loop back to January 1st, 2019. You know, you had this conversation with your wife. She's telling you that you can be better. What did it feel like? Like, talk to me about like that day. Like, what kind of emotions were you feeling that day?
Well, I quit on December 26th. December 25th was the last go at it. So December 26th was the day that I officially started quit drinking. And then January 1st, I did the video. I hope that this is going to be really valuable for people, because I have this conversation a lot with people, and it's like, it's really scary. It's really, you know, something that has become habitual, that you depend on. It's like the only thing that at times, the only thing that you enjoy, the only escape that you have from the misery of life some days is now going to be gone. And how the hell am I going to function with it? So there was a lot of trepidation and uncertainty around that. And also, you know, just being aware that now I got to face stuff. I have to deal with this somehow, because I can't go back to this. And that was scary. You know, you start taking inventory of your life and what's wrong and what's broken, what needs to be fixed, the damage that you've done. And, but there's also a hopefulness, you know, like knowing now this, I'm freed from this, because I think a lot of it, and I hear this a lot from other people as well, so I know it's not just me, but there's something deep that you're doing to yourself when you're poisoning yourself and you're causing this damage. You know, like, it's like it feels like it's so fundamentally wrong in your very soul that what you're doing is just so, it just weighs on your conscience. So there was, to be freed from that and knowing that I'd made that decision and I wasn't going back. I mean, at least for the time being, like I'd said, I still consider it that I'm on an indefinite hiatus from alcohol. But it, having that freedom of knowing this isn't going to be in control of me anymore was really relieving, to say the least.
And talk about that relief. Did it take a month to feel that relief? Like, did it take 3 months? Like, how long did it take to start feeling that relief?
It was pretty instant. I think that I was building up to it for a while. I was getting to a point where I knew, like, I got to face this and deal with this, because it's just getting worse and it's going to continue to get worse. So the relief of knowing, wow, like, this is actually, I'm done. I mean, I remember saying to my wife that morning, I'm like, okay, I'll cut back. And she's like, no, this has to be done. I'm like, yeah, it does. And the fear and everything that, you know, the uncertainty and all that stuff was there, but it was also just, it was pretty instant, because I knew, like, I'm going to be freed from this feeling. I dealt with major anxiety when I'd be hungover, and just, it's like you feel like you just want to die. Like, it's the worst anxiety you could ever imagine that comes from being hungover, especially when it's becoming habitual. So, you know, knowing I wasn't going to have that anymore and all that stuff was kind of what I used to keep myself strong. And it's the same thing that I used as I was coming into parts of it getting dark, because as I had said, like, I quit drinking. I posted that video January 1st, and then I had a buddy of mine who runs a recovery center in Bali who went through major drug and alcohol problems. And he messaged or he commented on it. And he said, you're going to go through some dark times over the next 6 months because everything's adjusting. So he said, just be aware of it. And it was a four-letter acronym that he used for the condition. I can't remember what it was. I should look it up. But I remember just thinking, oh, dude, I'm good. Like, it's 7 days in. I'm not struggling. It's not hard, as hard as I thought it would be. I'm good. I got this. 4 months later, and just started to get really dark. And part of what helped me get through that was reminding myself that I'll look back on that, on this, and know that I had to sit with this and deal with it, and that I'll be grateful for it. So, and that's been the case. So I think a big thing, like one of the things I talked about early on was, like, for me, it's like, you have to have something better to look forward to. And Jordan Peterson talks about this. There's a really good talk with him and Theo Vaughn where they talk about alcohol, and he said, man, alcohol is really damn good. So you better have something good to replace it. And for me, I think a lot of that was, you know, a vision for something better. And it's like, I'm sick and tired of this wrecking what I know could be better in my life.
Talk to me about some of the people, some of the content you were listening to when you started this journey. You brought up Jordan Peterson. You also talk a lot about Brené Brown.
Yep.
Maybe give me some of the insights that you picked up from those two people.
Jordan Peterson, the one thing that I love about him, I mean, there's so much stuff that I love about what he talks about, but he's so real and open and honest about the reality of suffering and malevolence in the world. And I think that because there's so much talk about positivity and all these things, and that's the cool buzzword, that a lot of people, it's like people don't want to talk. If you talk about something that doesn't feel good, that's negative. And so there's a complete unbalance there. So for listening to him and having that perspective, and it's like, you know, it makes so much sense. You have to orient yourself in the world. And part of that is understanding that malevolence and pain and suffering and all that stuff is very real. And we got to learn how to navigate through life through that. And I just think a lot of people are putting on blinders to that. You know, they're just not it's like they're putting their fingers in their ears and humming and ignoring what's actually happening out there because it's not positive. So that was really helpful. But the biggest single thing in this journey for me with him was his talk on courage, and then talking about the need to deal with your past and saying, like, your brain is always trying to figure out whether or not your environment is safe. And if you have past events that you haven't dealt with, those events mastered you. And insofar as your brain and your emotional system is concerned, those moments rendered you vulnerable, which means you're at a very deep level, basically you think that the world is dangerous. So it's going to create a massive amount of anxiety and tension and stress under the surface. And you have to go back and deal with it. And that honestly was the biggest thing that helped me start to deal with it, was sitting down and writing it out. Because, you know, when I started writing it out, I realized, like, I haven't talked about my childhood before 16. And it's funny because I asked two of my best friends and my wife, started with one of my best friends. I said, have I ever talked to you about my past? And he's a buddy of mine that quit drinking a couple of years ago. And we used to drink a lot together. And he's the type of guy that we could have any conversation about. So I was curious, like, have I ever talked about my childhood? He's like, hardly ever at all. He said, your story always started with when your dad died at 16 and built from there. Same thing with one of my other best friends who I'm super open with everything about. And then my wife said the exact same thing. And it was like, geez, that speaks to me that I obviously need to begin to process this. And so going through Jordan Peterson stuff, I actually got his self-authoring platform where you dive into your past and you write out different epochs of your childhood that impacted you. And writing it out was incredibly hard, like reliving all those emotions and what it was like, because I look back, my whole childhood was just nothing but unstable chaos. It was awful. I don't look back on it with any fondness whatsoever. And like I say, like, I know I recognize that my childhood, in light of what a lot of other people have gone through, like, I didn't see people murdered, I didn't go through some trauma, the crazy stuff a lot of other people have gone through, but to me, for that little kid, it was freaking awful. So that was a huge relief. I think the biggest thing that did for me was it gave me empathy for myself. It made me understand, like, okay, if you went through this shit, obviously it makes sense. There's unresolved stuff which does not just go away. So it gave me empathy for myself, and which translated into empathy for other people, which honestly has made life far more peaceful, because I'm able to look at people with far more generosity than I used to. So that's been the big help with Jordan. And it's funny because it's been a natural progression from Jordan Peterson. I started listening to Dr. Gabor Mate, who's a a specialist in addiction and early childhood trauma. And he has a really good interview on with Brian Rose on London Real and Tim Ferriss. If you want to listen to one, the one with Tim Ferriss, because I'm sure a lot of your community loves Tim Ferriss. But
absolutely. And I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss myself. I want to jump in here because I don't want to let this get away from me. You talked about developing empathy for yourself, which allowed you to develop empathy for others. One thing that I've heard you say before is that the antidote to shame is empathy. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand that. Like, I don't get it. Like, could you explain that quote in the context of this conversation you had to have with yourself about your childhood?
Well, that comes from Brené Brown, because she's a specialist in that. But it's basically, it's like, if you have empathy, if you understand why you do what you do, and you have like true, like Dr. Gabor Mate talks about compassion inquiry, like genuine, instead of shitting on yourself and saying, why the fuck did you just do that? You talk to yourself and say, like, why did you do that? Like, you know, like trying to understand instead of trying to condemn yourself. And when you start to understand why you do what you do, and you understand the pain and the shame and everything that's behind it, then it starts to make sense. And then it's really hard to have self-hatred or self-condemnation. And I think that same principle is true for anybody else. You know what I mean? Like, it's like when you get close to people in their pain, it's really hard to judge and to hate them for it, or to have to condemn them for it, because you understand. Does that make sense?
No, that definitely makes sense. And so in the context of yourself, you know, you talked about finding your father dead at 16. Like, was there some type of shame that you felt like you needed to get over? Like, talk to me about that in the context of what you went through.
No, not with that, there wasn't. But one of the things, as I was going through my past stuff, this just happened a couple months ago, where I was having dinner with my family, and I could just feel this darkness just welling up inside of me. And I didn't know what it was, but all of a sudden I will relive this memory of being probably like 4 or 5 or 6 or something like that, and seeing rejection, seeing this look in my dad's eyes of like, you're not good enough, I'm disappointed in you. And it felt like pure rejection, and that feeling of shame that I think a lot of people can relate to when they're kids. And it was like just so real to me, because going through part of this, you know, your emotions are raw and real, and like, it was coming up, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, I have to sit with this. I wanted to run and ignore it, because the pain was so much, but I had to sit there with it. And I just broke down. I went and sat by myself, and I remember my wife, she came down and saw me, and we talked about it. And I said to her, the pain of feeling that shame and rejection as that little kid was infinitely worse than that pain I went through of finding my dad dead. And that was such a light bulb moment for me, especially through the process of taking in Gabor Mate stuff, who talks about childhood trauma and how much trauma relates to the loss of connection with yourself and with others. It's not, you know, these horrible events that happen, it's our response to it. And then, you know, Brené Brown, who is arguably the foremost research on shame, putting it all together and really realizing the impact of that. I don't think if I would have had that information in my mind to understand it, it wouldn't have hit me as hard. You know what I mean? Because you're not as cognizant of how much that stuff impacts you until you really understand how much it impacts you and how dark it is, especially when it's mixed with like data, you know? So nothing around my dad's death, but definitely early childhood, because we weren't very close. I didn't feel like he had a lot of respect for me until I was about 12, and then that relationship started to happen. And I honestly, without that, I'd probably be dead.
Why?
Because I think that when I started to feel acceptance from him, and like he really actually respected me, and he started to change the way that he responded to me, that just gave me such a solid footing, even though it was only for a couple of years. And I think I just wonder sometimes if that's why I forgot my early childhood, because there was so much of the opposite of that. And I think it reorientated me at that stage of my life and gave me some footing of confidence, because so much of that is instilled in us from our parents. So I think if that wasn't there, I was going down a dark road, I remember. And then that started to shift. completely based upon his shift in how he talked to me and how he responded to me. So I think I just would have gone down a bad road because, you know, that self-condemnation and shame and lack of vision for yourself and lack of confidence is so deadly.
So tell me, you're spending all of this time learning these new frameworks, learning about yourself. You said earlier that talking about mental health and the things that you're going through it's not exactly cool, like, because it's not positive, and positive is what's cool right now. Why did you want to share your journey on social media? Like, why did you feel like you wanted to create content as you went along?
When I did the video on January 1st, I just felt like this would be a good idea for public accountability. And I know that there's other people that are going through it. And I had no idea the response that I would get, but it was pretty quickly that I started to get people that were either that I'd known for a long, long time that were reaching out to me personally that I had no idea who were struggling, that really opened up to me. And then just the continued comments and connections that I've made through it, and which led to just more conversations with people and getting into it and really sitting and trying to understand what people are going through, because I know that so few people have anybody that'll actually sit and try to understand. So it just became so incredibly obvious to me how deeply alone everybody is. And so it was like, I just couldn't not do it. I couldn't not do it. It was just, it's like, there's just something inside of me that's like, I have to talk about this. I have to let people know they are not alone, because everybody feels so alone, and that is what's going to kill people. So I just feel a big responsibility for it. And I also get a ton of meaning from it, you know, to like have people message me from the other side of the world saying, you were the thing that got me to stop drinking. I was going to take my life until I saw your video. Like, that is so incredibly mind blowing. So
what does it feel like when you read one of those emails or get one of those DMs?
It's heavy, man. It's like the ultimate thing. Like, it's just such a, I could die tomorrow and be at peace knowing I made a difference type of thing, I guess. I don't know how else to say it. It's just, it's so moving to know you've made a difference in somebody else's life.
You know, in your earlier response, you said something like, you feel like so many people are deeply alone. I want to stay with this a little bit, because I think it's hard to tell, because of the way people present themselves on the internet, whether people are happy or sad, or if they feel deeply alone. From your perspective, why do you feel, or how do you know that so many people feel deeply alone?
There's so much fake facade stuff going on. Everybody's posturing. Everybody's trying to put up this front that there's something that they're not, sort of, and it's all rooted in shame and insecurity from what I can see. And so I just hear it so much that people say, like, I can't trust anybody I can't deeply trust anybody that I'm connected with. Gossip and backstabbing and all that stuff is so prevalent in every single social circle, it seems, because of the fact people are insecure. And so as soon as you get into gossiping and that stuff, it's a betrayal. Like, if you're willing to betray somebody else in front of me, you're willing to do the same thing behind my back, which is such a devastating cause of disconnection in relationships. And that, to me, is like, if we don't have those connections where, I mean, you know what it's like. Like, we all know what it's like to connect with somebody that we feel they understand us and we can trust them. And there's nothing better than that. And I just see, so in my conversations and seeing things, I just see so much of a lack of that. So I just think people are just deeply, deeply, deeply alone.
And for someone who may be listening that does feel deeply, deeply alone, is it a journey that they need to go on? Like, what, and I'm not asking you really to prescribe, but what are your thoughts on how people can start to feel less alone?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's a really hard situation for a lot of people. I don't have the answer. And I've been wrestling with this with people, and it's been a pretty common question for me. But one thing, especially when people are facing dealing with alcohol is I've basically been telling people, like, if you don't find these connections, don't even bother trying, because you won't make it. Like, it's, you need people around you who have been through it and understand it so that you can feel understood. We have such a deep need around that. And, you know, people have asked me about AA and stuff like that. I never went down that road, but I know a lot of people that have. And I think one of the biggest things you can get from something like that is that connection and having people around you who understand, because I don't care what anybody says. There's so much stigma around this stuff. Like, there is so much stigma around talking. You start talking about your past, let's see how much everybody really gives a shit about mental health. You'll find out real fast. And so you need people around you, because people who haven't been through this stuff, people who haven't been through dark depression and, you know, suicidal thoughts and addiction, they just can't fathom. And it's really hard to not have people look at you like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And that's just a really impossible thing to take, especially when you're starting out and you haven't got that footing and understanding of what your identity is, and you don't have those connections. So when you have people around you that can affirm, yes, you're on the right path, yes, like, I understand, this is more common to people than what meets the eye, it just relieves that opportunity for self-condemnation, I feel. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. And I have a question for you. You know, you talked about the stigma around mental health and the fact that you really just don't know what it's like unless you go through it. For someone like myself, I never dealt with suicidal thoughts. I'm not very deeply anxious. One thing that I worry about when I talk about mental health, or really I talk about like positivity and self-awareness a lot in my content. And one thing that I worry is that I do a lot, or I may come off as virtue signaling, right? And then I may be, my message really isn't for people who have been deeply hurt, or, you know, what's your perspective on people who haven't been through deep emotional trauma, how they should be engaging on social media? I don't know. Does that make sense as a question?
Yeah, it does. And it's something that I don't know if I can answer, because I just think it's really hard unless you've been there to fully understand. I think maybe like imagining what it would be like is a good way to develop understanding. It certainly is in a lot of other contexts. But it's hard, because it's just hard unless you've been through it. You know what I mean?
100%.
So I don't really know how to. So I remember it wasn't even that long ago for me. Like I've said before, like, people talking about their past, I was the one that was like, get the fuck over it. Like, who gives a shit? And that was my posture towards myself. Even like, you know, people would say, why don't you go and, you know, if they knew what I went through, they're like, you need to go deal with that. I'm like, for what? So I can rehash my past and live all that pain and all that? Like, fuck it. It's done. I can't do anything about it. Just get over it. And so I can relate to that. And there is definitely a stigma and a perspective that when people start doing that, it's typically being used to justify staying where they're at. And I just think that, I think that's the big thing that people need to be careful of. And I see that in a lot of these communities often, is that's the attitude of just get over it. And I think being very cautious around that is really important, because when people start communicating about that stuff, they're communicating it for a reason. Does that answer it in any way?
No, I appreciate the response, because it's just something that I've been thinking about and it's hard for me to verbalize, which is why the question was kind of jumbly and kind of rambly.
I totally get what you're asking, because I've been wondering that myself. So
I want to start talking about other people's opinions. You know, I randomly came across one of your videos on my For You page on TikTok, and you said something that really, really stuck with me, because I'm a big Gary Vee fan, and what he always says is, don't give a fuck about anyone else's opinion, right? But in one of your videos, you changed the language to acting in spite of other people's opinions. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. I think a lot of things that I've been dealing with Gary's content is listening to him was a big thing that made me look at myself and be like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, this guy is a person who's functioning as a high performer, no question about it. Why is that? and so when he says things like that, and I've always, I've, it's not like I've been fairly good, I think, in most of my adult life of being able to function in spite of giving a shit what people think. And when Gary would say that, you know, I would always go down the road of for other people, like, but how does somebody who doesn't know how to do that get there? You don't just make a decision to not give a fuck what people think, because that takes willpower to continue on. And if you don't have that foundation of identity and knowing who the fuck you are, that's going to crack eventually, because that external pressure and lack of belonging and rejection you are going to feel when you put yourself out there is fundamentally devastating and very hard to navigate unless you know who you are and what you stand for. So, and I used to say all the time, I don't give a fuck what people think. And then I realized that's not helpful, because I do give a fuck what people think. I'm just learning. I've learned how to act in spite of it. And so it became really obvious to me that I needed to communicate that way, because of the fact that so many people, I think, will get to a place where they're going to feel like they have to get to this place where they don't give a shit before they can do anything. When reality is, it's like, no, you got to get to a place where you can act in spite of it. So that was what hit me and why that started coming up.
I think that's really, really powerful, because, you know, another thing that Gary says a lot is like, don't give a fuck about your mom's opinion. And I'm like, yeah, but like, I feel like it's integral to the way that I think, you know, like there are certain people's opinions who are always a part of my decision process. But what you just said there, I think can really help a lot of people, is that you don't even have to get to the point where you don't care. It's that you have to get to the point where you can continue to act in spite of.
Exactly. And I think a lot of that is wrapped up in a solid understanding of who you are and being at peace with your process. Because if people are going to headline read, they're going to judge, they're going to see one little 10-second snippet of what you have to say, and they're going to run off in their own mind and have some story about you. And unless you understand your own story and have that peace with yourself, you are not going to be able to not get sucked into having other people's projections of what your identity is actually start creating how you perceive yourself to be. So I think that's super important.
Talk to me about self-esteem, because what you just said, you know, it's important to have your own identity if you're going to venture out and do things that you know people are going to judge you for. Talk to me about how you've developed self-esteem in your own life, or if you felt like you've always had self-esteem.
No, I struggled with it big time until I was about 13 or 14. My dad got me the book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective Teens. And that book started to give me some tools and understanding, which again was probably a process. I can't say for clearly now because it was a long time ago, but I think there was an element to it where I started to understand myself and why I was acting in ways that were not ideal. And it gave me tools to be able to fix it. So that helped. And my dad, you know, getting to a point of being far more affirming of me was a huge thing as well. And then, and I think that, you know, the way that I navigated my dad's death was just like, man, if I can handle this shit, I can handle anything. And because, like, you know, I said what I said earlier, I sat there and was like, I can't let this destroy me. And right after that, I'm sitting there right beside my dad's dead body. And 3 things came to my mind when I made up my mind. I'm like, I'm not going to let this destroy me. You can go this way or this way. 3 things came to mind. Everything happens for a reason. You're going to learn something from this, and everything works out in the end. That was a big thing to realize. I actually could see it in my mind at that time was seeing all the shit that I've been through. And when you're heading into shit in your life, it's hard to not look at it and be like, my life's over, right? When things go catastrophic, it's really hard to not project that my life is done. And I started looking at all those events where that seemed the case heading into it, and how none of those events ever transpired to be the way that I thought they would be. And so it was like something happened that's really settled deep inside of me that there is really nothing that doesn't work out. Everything works out in one way or another. And so, you know, that was part of it.
For someone who's listening that has dealt with something catastrophic in the recent past, like, what can you say to really convince them that everything really does work out in the end?
I don't know. That's a really tough one because there's so much emotional stuff involved in that too. But I think that one thing that helped me, when I was in a dark time a few years back, probably 7 years ago or so, I can take all the biggest things in the world and put them on my shoulders for some stupid reason. I think it actually is apparently a symptom of dealing with alcoholism with your parents. But I just remember this one day, one of the things I mentally did was I said, write out all the things in your, like, think of all the things in the last 5 years that you worried about, and think about what you thought projected was going to happen. And then think of how many things actually happened and how many things actually came to pass. And it was like, I thought of that list and it was like every single thing that I worried about, if it did happen, the end result was a fraction of what I thought it was going to be. And none of those projections that I put out there in my mind, that story that I told myself, none of that stuff actually transpired. So it's like it completely robbed that story that we tell ourselves of all of its power, as long as I practice that. So that was basically what I did in that moment with my, when my dad died. And that's basically been the strongest thing that I've helped to hack into that, when your mind is going down that emotional road of telling yourself, you know, that life's over and it's going to be far worse than it is.
You know, I'm really glad that you brought up the example of kind of that writing challenge or prompt, because you actually brought up a different example about how to care less about other people's opinions, or about how to act in spite of other people's opinions. You put this exercise on TikTok that I actually went through, and I'll give you a chance to explain it to the audience. But just before you do, I want to say that, you know, when I did the exercise, I realized that a lot of the things that I want to do but I'm scared to do, and the people that come to mind when I think about why I'm scared of doing those things, a lot of it really just comes down to, I just don't want to have the conversation with that person about what they're going to think. And I've started to realize that that's actually what I'm afraid of when it comes to the things that I don't want to do. So could you talk about that exercise?
Yeah, I was really feeling really moved by just seeing how much I've just spent a lot of time really thinking about the implications of letting the opinions of other people stop you. And one quote that's been going through my mind that's been really powerful over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, is that to give up courage is to take hold of despair, and there is no other option. It's like when you want to do something and you wimp out on it, you, by virtue of doing so, take hold of despair. And so it's like, we all struggle with it. So I see it in my own life too. And just really wanting to give people some perspective on how to get past that. And it's like, I really think that most people, if you really became aware of why you care about somebody else's opinions and the people that seem to matter to you, you'll realize there's not a whole lot to care about. And so there's something powerful about seeing that as plainly as you would by writing it out. Does that make sense?
No, 100%. And when I went through the exercise, there's this really weird thing about writing things down where it just became smaller. Like when I had to find a word to explain what I was feeling, the feeling became smaller.
Right. Exactly. Because you recognize, you're so aware of what it actually is, instead of this emotional story that your brain goes down this road of. And that's exactly the same feedback that I've gotten from other people on that, is you just realize, holy shit, like, why the hell would I worry about what anybody's thinking? And the other thing is that, I think I said it shortly after in another quick video, was like, go to the people that are judging you and like put it back on them and be like, who the fuck do you think you are that I need to give a shit about your opinion? Because they won't be able to answer. Like, you, when you think about like the arrogance that you think that your opinion matters, is absolutely stunning, that you have the audacity and authority to judge my life when you don't understand dick. Like, that's the thing. Nobody understands a fraction of what you've been through or why you do what you do. You don't even, like, this is one of the things that I went through when I started going through this process. It was like, holy shit, man. I literally have no idea, or had no idea, and still have no idea why the hell I did the things that I did. And now that I'm starting to figure it out, I sure as hell now, because I can't even figure out why I do what I do, I have no place to judge anybody else. And that position to put towards anybody else too, you know, from a place of, if you're feeling judgment and condemnation from others, is super powerful. And I think it all kind of fits together, because it just nullifies that capacity for them to have. You just realize, like, your capacity to judge is so incredibly inhibited because you don't have all the information. It's like, that's so fundamental to figuring out anything, is you have to have all the information to be able to make an accurate assessment. And everybody out there in your life who's making these assessments, they're making it on next to no information. So they don't have the authority or the place to even begin to judge. And when you can have that posture, whether it's actually externally or just internally, I think it can really do something for people.
You know, tell me, when you go through this process of really realizing that you don't have enough context to judge other people, how has your relationship with other people changed?
That's a really good question. It's been way more peaceful. Way more peaceful. There's something about having generosity towards other people. Brené Brown talks about this. She asked the question in one of her talks with Chase Jarvis, I think it was. She asked her husband, she's like, do you think that people are really trying, they're really doing the best with what they have? And, you know, she's talking about some really tough situations where people were, you know, in drug addiction and, you know, basically abandoning their kids and something like that. And his answer was, I don't know, but I know that I'm happier if I think like that. And then she just gets into it. And I'm like, I really think that that is the case. Like if I can't understand why I do what I do, I have no business judging anybody else. I'm not qualified to judge anybody else. I have no freaking idea what this person went through. So it's made me a lot more empathetic towards others and understanding, which has made my existence far more peaceful. It's helped with everything. It's helped with my wife and my kids. It's been a tough thing to deal with because before I was such a hard ass. And now knowing I've projected shame onto my own children, I've made my kids feel the same way that I felt when I was telling that story earlier of when I was 5, 4, 5, 6, 7 and feeling that shame. I've done that to my kids. And now I gotta face that. Now I gotta correct it. Now I gotta deal with it because that's some deep shit. So it's helped in innumerable ways. And as hard as that is to face, it's like, well, I have to deal with that, right? Like it is what it is.
Tell me, are your kids old enough to use TikTok?
My oldest is 9. He's going to be 10 in February. So technically, I guess.
The reason I ask
a lot of that stuff. So.
Yeah. I guess the reason I ask is like, you know, have you had these types of conversations with your kids? Do you plan on it? Like, are you waiting for one day when, you know, your 9-year-old says, hey dad, what this TikTok you just put up here? Like what's going on? Have you had those kind of conversations? Are you thinking about them?
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. And I don't have the answer. I'm actually starting to see a therapist in 2 weeks. So that's, you know, one of those things is like, how do I balance this and have discretion and use these things, right? Because I understand that there's implications for that with my kids. But at the same time, you know, I know that there's plenty of other people who have navigated this stuff. So there is an answer. My hope is that it will make my kids more empathetic and understanding. You know, that's one thing I wish to impart onto them and kind of always have. So that's a really good question. And it's not, I don't yet have the answer. And it's probably not going to be an easy thing to navigate.
Well, I appreciate you telling me that. You know, I want to get into wrap up mode, but before we go, I want to, you know, you talked about being a part of the curse-free Gary Vee team. You talked about it kind of in passing. Could you just kind of give us the full story, like how you got into Gary Vee, how you got the idea for curse-free Gary Vee, reaching out to his team, what it's like now, just kind of give us that background.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to say, I wouldn't consider myself an official member of Team Gary Vee, and I don't think they would consider that either. I've never had that conversation, but certainly working with them has been really neat. I got into Gary's content, I think around 2013 or so. One of my best friends said, hey, here's a guy who's kind of talking about similar things that you are. And I watched his famous keynote that he did at that Inc. magazine conference, you know, the one that really put him on the map. And as soon as I heard him dropping F-bombs, I was like, this is my guy. Like he's this guy, A, either is stupid and doesn't know what he's doing, or he knows what he's doing. He's being himself and he doesn't give a shit and he's got balls of steel. And, you know, it didn't take long to realize that the answer and who he was the latter. And so having started on my own entrepreneurial journey at that time, a lot of his stuff really spoke to me and it gave me and I'm sure you can relate to this, because people who are not on a journey of trying to accomplish more than the average and ordinary just don't understand this stuff. But it gave me affirmation that I was on the right path and doing the right things in spite of the fact of what everybody else thought. So I listened to his content, I think, more than pretty much anybody when I would listen to stuff. And then back in October or November of just this year, like I said, I was driving my boys to jujitsu and hockey practice. And that was when I liked listening to podcasts. I'd throw on Gary, and it's not like they haven't heard me swear, but for some reason, I just felt, you know, I know how to do this stuff. So why don't I just go edit a few of his keynotes that I love and throw them on Anchor so I can listen to them. And I did that. And then I checked back on the stats a few weeks later, and it was like there was hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of downloads. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, and it wasn't promoting it or anything. I think it ended up showing up in organic search when people would look up Gary Vaynerchuk or Gary V, because I initially called it the G-rated Gary V audio experience. And then, so it was starting to take off, and something I thought, you know what, I'm just going to keep, I had one of my guys edit them all, cause I didn't have the time to do it. And I didn't have the time to quality control, make sure that it was perfectly censored. So I had my guy editing 1 to 2, 3 episodes a day and just hammering it out there. And then, you know, it continued to grow and grow. And there was something that Gary said, I don't remember what it was, but I just remember having this feeling like I should probably reach out to him and let them know what I'm doing, because I don't want this to come across the wrong way.
Yeah.
When my intent with this is pure. So I actually emailed Gary this one night, I reached out to Steve, who was VaynerMedia's chief creative officer, on Facebook, because we're friends, and I asked him, like, hey man, I'm doing this, what should I do? He said, reach out to Andy Kranick. So I emailed Andy and emailed Gary. It was on one just this evening, saying, hey, here's what I'm up to. I'd rather die than think you guys, you know, have you guys think poor of me or think I'm up to something. So I just wanted to let you know what's happening. And if you guys want to coordinate on doing this together, I'm happy to keep doing it and working with you guys. If you guys want me to shut it down, you just tell me what you need me to do. And then Gary emailed me first thing the next morning, CC'd Andy, and said, hey, Andy, can you vet this? Thanks, Jay. And then so from there, jumped on the phone with Andy and the team, and they appreciate it. Then they're like, we're actually working on the same thing. Basically, we wanted to create a channel and a medium for this, because we know there's people that want it. And so, yeah, that's basically been it. We started working officially together in December. So,
and I'm sure you can't tell me everything about your relationship with them, but, what is your aspiration, I guess, for your relationship with Curse Free Gary Vee?
I don't know, man. I've actually wondered that myself too. I don't know. I feel like, to me, just being a part of this and being able to contribute to it and know that it's doing something for people like it's done for me has been the biggest thing. I wouldn't be surprised if something happens, but I don't really have any set intentions on it, because I guess there's something deep down that I don't want to try to force things. But like I said, I find a ton of satisfaction just knowing that I'm a part of it, and being able to actually give back to Gary in some way has been actually just really meaningful to me. And I think, you know, a lot of people hear that and like, that sounds like a pithy kind of bullshit answer. And it's like, well, when you've been through a lot of shit in life and you just realize what actually matters. And to me, making a difference really, really, really matters. I've done a lot of work over the last few years to really, oh, says we're connected. Are we good? Can you hear me?
Oh, I can still hear you.
Okay. I've done a lot of work over the last, I don't know, 7, 8, 10 years to really make sure I'm not being motivated by status and money, because I just feel like it's, for me, it's destructive. So I guess that's it. Really trying to make sure that that's what it is. And if something happens from it, awesome. If it doesn't, I'm not stuck one way or the other. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's such a small, if you look at the grand scheme of Gary and his content, what he's doing, this is like the smallest of the smallest aspect of it. So it's just really not a huge deal, but it is neat to see that there's thousands of downloads a day and it's doing something valuable for people, and I get to be a part of it, which is neat. You know, I get to give back to Gary. That's what feels cool.
Yeah. I really connect with what you said about giving back to Gary, because if Gary's given me anything, it's been voice. A little bit about me, you know, I work for a startup called Voice XP. I'm very passionate about voice, and I just feel like Gary kind of flipped a switch in my brain that got me to start caring about Alexa and Google and Bixby and really start to become a subject matter expert in these things. And I feel like that's going to be so good for me over the next 10 to 15 years. And I already feel like I want to give back to him for that, for just like showing me where the river was, you know?
Yeah, totally. Like, where would your life be without him? You know what I mean? So it's like in a sense, I feel like I've told Gary this, I owe you my life. Like, I might not be here today if it wasn't for you. So I get what you're saying, man. And I think a lot of people feel that way, because he does, and he wants. I remember hearing him say it a couple months ago in one of his talks. He's like, one of the best things that I get for feedback for people is I'm their shield for the criticism they get from other people. And it was like, I literally started bawling when I heard that, because I know that was true for me, and I know it's true for so many people. They cling to his message because there's such a barrage of shit from people who don't understand this journey.
Yeah, it's also a great way to just stop having conversations I don't want to have. When a lot of people ask me about why I put out certain videos on social media, I'm just like, oh, it's because Gary Vee told me to, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'm immediately freed from the stress of feeling like I need to justify something to people that are just never going to get it.
Yeah, exactly. And because they're never going to get it, it's almost like every personality is different. I know for me, it's my response to that is like, well, why do I need to jump through your hoops type of thing, right? And it's like, and that's why Gary like gives you that, to me anyways. You know, it's like, I'm not required to answer that of you. And if I want, you know, does that make sense? Like, I'm not trying to
hack. I love that phrase. I don't need to jump through your hoop.
Yeah, like, why don't you, well, before we get into it, I'd be happy to tell you, why don't you first tell me why I need to jump through your hoops? Tell me why your opinion should matter, or why your judgment or me having to justify what I do should matter to you. Like, what the fuck are you doing? And that's the answer a lot of times. It's like, they're not doing anything. And a lot of times there's something, I think, with people that are just sitting and playing life average and ordinary. They're not trying to achieve anything. They're not putting themselves out there, as Brené Brown says, and getting in the arena and doing something that requires courage. It's gotta hurt to see other people, especially, you know, to be out there doing that, because we have such a deep need for that in the depths of our soul to be able to do that, I think. So I think being wary of that too is helpful. It's jealousy, man. It's jealousy and envy is nasty.
I'm with you, and I want to, you know, it's always hard to find a place to end, because I feel like we could just keep going forever and ever. But I want people to know where they can find you on the internet. So give us, you know, your TikTok, YouTube, LinkedIn, whatever you want to tell us about you.
Yeah, I'm really active on TikTok right now. I really love it. And I'm surprised, because I'm talking about a lot of this stuff on TikTok, and I'm surprised to see that there's a really vibrant conversation around it. I thought I was going to get raked over the coals, but I give it a shot anyways. I think people are really looking for this stuff. So I'm active on TikTok, and it's just my name, Jay Woodford. Instagram, I'm fairly active on there. It's just the Jay Woodford, and Facebook. My Facebook page is the Jay Woodford. I think that's such a douchey name, but that's all I could come up with. And it's one of those things that I never thought. I'm like, okay, I just need my name in there. And it's, looking back, it's like, oh God, that sounds so arrogant. But that's the thing with me, is like, I'll just do it. And it's like, and then I pick up the pieces later, and people can assume what they want. And then on YouTube, I have some stuff on there too, and it's just Jay Woodford as well. So
very good. The way I always like to end is to ask my guests, tell me about something in the past week that was just a really good thing, like something that you're super grateful it happened. It could be something super duper small, something really big, or anything in between. But what comes to mind?
There's been so much lately. I don't know how to nail it down to one thing. I think that what keeps recurring is, the more that I'm diving into this stuff and understanding myself, as painful as it is, every single time I do this and I catch a glimpse of understanding of, you know, like how certain principles function in life and why I did the things I did and why I have certain issues, and finding clarity around it, it's like I just keep thinking to myself, like, God, this is the best fucking journey there is. Like, this is, I would so much rather sit with myself, write things out, go inside and understand these things than go somewhere else in the world and sit on a beach and enjoy it. Like, it's like the journey inside is just so incredible. So I've been feeling a ton of gratitude around that. And it wouldn't be possible without the pain, wouldn't have been possible without quitting drinking and just the corresponding putting stuff out there and knowing how much of a need for that conversation there is and seeing, you know, the responses to it and knowing that I'm making a difference somehow in some small way. It's just really special to me.